Boy, it's quiet in here this morning. I hope everybody had a great Mother's Day. Everybody ready? Okay. Good morning. Today I'm very pleased to announce Mary Mosman, a CPA, is Iowa's new state auditor. She will replace David Vout, who resigned to become head of the Government Accounting Standard Board. I want to thank David for his devoted more than a decade of public service to the people of Iowa and his faithful work as the watchdog, the taxpayer's watchdog. All Iowans are better off as a result of David Vout's service, where he oversaw their tax dollars at the state level and carefully monitored local tax dollars as well, rooting out waste and fraud and mismanagement. In working with David Vout, we ended the bad practices that led to instability and unpredictability in state budgets. We ended the use of one-time money for ongoing expenses. We enacted two-year budgets with five-year projections, and we closed a projected $900 million, this is the state level, $900 million projected deficit. As a result of our hard work, we now have our economic emergency fund and cash reserves fully funded, and we have a significant ending balance. When the Lieutenant Governor and I launched our search for a new state auditor, we had two major requirements. We wanted that individual to be a CPA, and we wanted to make sure that individual would adhere to the sound budgeting principles that were followed so closely by David Vout during all of his years as state auditor. In Mary Mosman, we found that and much more. Mary Mosman is a talented, experienced public servant who will keep a very close watch over the tax dollars. Mary and her husband Dan live in rural Ames and have four daughters. She's a member of the Iowa Society of CPAs. As a past president of the Nevada Rotary and is an active member of the Gilbert Education Foundation. I'm excited and looking forward to working with Mary as we continue to offer Iowa taxpayers the stability and predictability they deserve. I'm also pleased to mention the fact that she will be the very first woman to serve as Auditor of State. And now I'm pleased to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, thank you, Governor Branstad, and good morning. I've known Mary for a number of years as our work as local government officials. Mary served as the Story County Auditor for 10 years, and really she was a leader in the Auditors Association. Mary's one of the hardest working public officials that I've had the pleasure to work with and to know, and I look forward to working with her in the future. She will be a partner in ensuring Iowa's budget remains stable and predictable. We look forward to working with her as we continue the great progress we've made in closing the state's $900 million budget gap and building up our cash reserves and economic emergency funds. As the governor said, we were looking for an individual who followed those budget principles. Avoid the use of one-time money for ongoing expenses. Refrain from standing appropriations. Resist implementing new programs in the middle of the fiscal year. Avoid multi-year accelerating commitments. Accurately determine state revenue and expenses. Align expenses and revenue in the same fiscal year. Avoid funding programs through property taxes and fees, and reject diversion of funds statutorily authorized for a specific object to other purposes. She will be an advocate for standing up for those sound budget principles. I want to thank Mary for accepting this position and taking the level of service to a new level and one that will benefit all Iowans. And now, really, it is my great honor and pleasure to introduce Iowa's new state auditor, Mary Mosman.
Good morning, everybody. I am honored by the governor's appointment decision, and I want to thank him for his confidence and for his leadership. And I look forward every day to working the best that I can to not only validate the governor's decision, but also to earn the same type of confidence from the people of Iowa. I will do my very best every day. The governor asked me during our interview why I wanted to be the state auditor, and I wanted him to know, and now I want you to know. It's because the impact the state auditor has on the people of Iowa, it's significant. Every government entity, the schools, the cities, the counties, the state, they use public funds to provide their public services, and that impacts everybody. So to be a part of that quality control surrounding those public funds, that matters, and I will be honored to provide that type of service. I do want to say a quick thank you to my family, as they were giving their thoughtful words of consideration while I was exploring this opportunity. That meant a great deal to me, so I wanted to say a quick thank to them. I also want to thank Secretary of State Matt Schultz, whom I've had the pleasure of working with these last couple of years as his deputy in the Secretary of State's office. He has provided support and encouragement throughout this entire effort, and that is very much appreciated. And I will miss working with you, Matt, as well as the outstanding individuals in the Secretary of State's office. I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge and thank David Vaught for his recognized leadership of this office and for his role as the taxpayer's watchdog. He is going to be a tough act to follow, I know this, but I like a challenge, and I'm going to look forward to continuing with the best practices and procedures that he has established. Consistency in these matters is paramount. My top priorities will be to work with the governor and the governor's office and the General Assembly to continue to maintain these consistent budgeting practices that the State Auditor's Office has put into place. I also want to communicate throughout the state to the people of Iowa information regarding the state's budget and our financial status. And of course, I want to be able to provide those necessary financial audits all throughout the government entities. Not all of these priorities and duties are accomplished by just one individual. So the current team of professionals that works in the State Auditor's Office, they are the heart and the soul behind most all of these duties, and they do a great job. I am looking forward to working with this exceptional group of individuals. In fact, I can't wait to get started. So one last thing, as your Auditor of State, I will serve the people of Iowa. I will welcome comments and input and suggestions, and I will do what I can to address any concerns that you might have. In other words, I work for you. Please feel free to contact me. I am honored to be your Auditor of State. So thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we'd be glad to respond to your questions.
How do you spell your name?
M-O-S-I-M-A-N. Well, as I said during my remarks, I think it's very important to have consistency in this office. I have been elected 3 times. I am looking forward to a statewide campaign.
So you are going to run?
Yes.
I will be running.
My wife gives me a hard time about that. I'm a little quick sometimes. I'm sorry.
You're a Republican?
Yes, I am a Republican. Yes, I had 3 elections, and I served as auditor the entire 10 years.
Right, in Nevada, by the way. That's where the county seat is.
County.
Just when was the last time you did the work of a CPA? As a county auditor, you're in charge of elections, and then the Secretary of State's office, you were also working on elections and business finance. When was the last time you actually worked as a CPA?
I did not work as a CPA in the county auditor's office. That's not a requirement of the job. I had my CPA while I was county auditor, and there's financial responsibilities there. I did work in the private sector, not as a CPA, but in the accounting arena.
I would also say I served 6 years on the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants Board as a public member, and you have CPAs that serve in public accounting, you have CPAs that serve in industry and business, and you have CPAs that serve in government. And we had people in all of those areas. The great thing about a CPA is they have the expertise and the knowledge, and I think the integrity to provide sound financial information, accurate, reliable information. And Cindy Adams is here, who is the executive director of the Iowa Society. So we did contact her and others to consult with, because I think having a CPA with their independence and integrity is something that Iowans are. First of all, David Vout set a very high standard, and he did this very well. And the fact that he was chosen to be the new chair of the Government Accounting Standards Board, I think, is a compliment to the work that he did. We obviously want to maintain that same kind of commitment.
How will you maintain your independence? The governor has actually chosen you to be in this position. How comfortable will you be in giving him that?
That's a great question. One of my top priorities is to be an independent voice for the people of Iowa, and that means working with the governor's office and the General Assembly. I assume there will be differences of opinion, and they will just have to be addressed, because it doesn't go along the lines of politics when it comes to the financial matters of the state.
I would say I actually asked her that question in the interview, and I do think it's important that we have a state auditor that will be an independent voice for the people. And, you know, none of us like to get bad news, but I would much rather get it early when we can still make some changes and prevent making a mistake. So one thing I would just ask the auditor to do is, if she sees that the General Assembly or the governor or the combined were making a bad move, let's, you know about it in advance and try to correct it as quickly as we can.
There's significant concerns at the state level, and it stems from the federal level. That's one of the concerns anyway. The federal sequester, about 50% of our general fund expenses are covered by federal funds, and that means that as the federal sequester impacts us now, it's also going to impact us long term. And I'm 51.
In your deputy state, or your deputy secretary of state now?
That is my title as of Friday.
Yeah, she started today. We've already actually signed the papers, and she signed
she's
the oath,
terrific.
And she's going to be at the executive council meeting here at 10 o'clock. So
she is in the position right now.
Right. We just made that decision.
Did you take the oath this morning?
Yes.
Yes.
And what's the salary for the position?
103, 102, 103.
Same as all the other elected officials. They all, I think, are.
Approximately.
Yes.
How old, what are the age of your children?
23, 21, 18, and 17.
Very good.
And if I can add, university, or Iowa State University grad, University of Northern Iowa, University of Iowa, high schooler.
All bases covered. Okay. Are there other questions on this subject? Okay, we'd be glad to answer questions on other subjects as well this morning.
Your decision to bring Jody Tymeson onto the Veterans Center there, how is that not a reflection of a lack of focus on confidence in the Commandant Worley?
Well, first of all, I think with Commandant Worley, we have an experienced, capable administrator who has had nursing home administration experience. It's a very large facility. He did that in Kentucky before he came to Iowa. However, we felt that having a chief operating officer with the background and experience that Jody Tymeson has, having served as a general in the Iowa National Guard, and of course heading up the Department of Veterans Affairs, we just felt that gave us the strongest possible team. So I just think that, and she's got the tremendous respect and support among veterans, and I think that she can help Commandant Worley address them. And I would also say, you know, most importantly, we want to make sure that the veterans who are residents of that home get the best possible care. And we are confident that is the case. We want to make sure that continues to be.
So does this mean you don't believe the allegations against the Commandant?
Well, there's a lot of secondhand information and a lot of hearsay, you know, that people have repeated. Our experience has been that the Commandant is on a first-name basis with literally all of the veterans in the home, and when I've walked through the home and I've been there for special events, I find that he is very well respected and appreciated.
I would second that. Every time that we've been there, the rapport and the response from the veterans with Commandant Worley has been excellent.
Well, it's the first I've heard of that. And obviously, that's why we have long-term care ombudsmen to check out these kinds of things. So that's the first I've heard of that.
Now, Senator Sodders, you're aware, sent you a letter last week asking, saying that because of these very serious allegations, he felt that it was appropriate to put Mr. Worley on administrative leave because he's, so many people said that they felt intimidated by his presence there, and he felt that there was a question of whether you could really appropriately investigate while he is still there. Are you in fact going to put him on leave?
No. First of all, you know, I guess I'm tired of some of the politics that's going on here. Yeah, I think this has got a lot to do with politics, and I think it's got a lot to do with the personalities. But the fact is, I think we have a very dedicated public servant, and I guess I don't appreciate people using character assassination and attacking people with secondhand information. We're very interested in hearing directly from anybody, but this kind of secondhand information and so-and-so saw something or said something that is secondhand, it's not admitted in court, and it's not really considered to be reliable. Well, my chief of staff has been there, as David Roeder, and they have reviewed and investigated those things. And
and found it not valid, or what was
Well, I'm not sure exactly what.
Well, we certainly didn't find any reason to place David on administrative.
Governor, to get back to Kay's question, though, you were saying a lot of this is secondhand information. The ombudsman, though, that's going directly to the veterans there, and those 11 people
right.
Are the ones who said it was a prison, that kind of thing. So isn't that a different level of...
Yeah, and as I said, this is the first I've ever heard of that. And I haven't heard anything from the ombudsman.
Well,
I would assume,
right,
the ombudsman doesn't report to our office, but I mean, if there's a situation that we felt was critical or dangerous to people that live there, obviously we would take action, but we have not heard or seen that. She sure did.
I didn't get to play at the barn, but I went every year. So.
She was a star forward for Interstate 35, in case you didn't know. But
if you might comment on the impact he had on women's sports, because Iowa, unlike many of the surrounding states, offered equal opportunity to females in basketball far before many other states.
Well, E. Wayne Cooley was a visionary leader for women's athletics, for girls' athletics. Iowa girls high school basketball, they started the state tournament in 1920. I had a teacher that played for Roland in 16, 17, 18, and 19. That's back when they were the mythical state champs. They started the state tournament in 1920. He became executive director of the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union in 1954. Well, he made it phenomenally successful. I believe that we had better attendance at the girls' state tournaments than the boys' state tournaments at that time. He also helped develop girls' softball and many of the other sports that we now have. So he was a visionary. He was a great marketer and promoter. You know the pageant that they put on in the girls' state tournament. So he's going to be greatly missed, and he has a really wonderful legacy that he leaves in terms of girls' athletics and just promoting it and gaining a great public acceptance of it. And of course, really it was rural, small schools that kind of led the way, and eventually the big schools also. When I was in high school, we didn't have girls basketball in Forest City, but a lot of schools did, and my aunt played for Leland back when they had girls basketball. So, but under Ewing Cooley, they brought it to a whole new level.
Nationally,
I'm gonna turn it over to Lieutenant
level.
Governor.
Well, there's no way I can compete with the historian that I travel around, but he does have a wonderful legacy that he leaves. And you're right about the small towns. If you were in the state tournaments, the town literally shut down, and we loaded a school bus, and we drove to Des Moines, and we participated, and it was one of the highlights of the year. So it was a great, great opportunity for small communities all across the state of Iowa. Really just the recognition and the excitement and the national attention. Iowa led the way on it, and really appreciate all that he did for that.
We were recently in Mediapolis, Iowa, the Lieutenant Governor and I. You may recall Bud McLaren was the coach there that took him to the state tournament for about 20 years in a row. One of my high school classmates was assistant coach for a while, and I remember I think they would basically, on their school calendar, they just made that a week of vacation. They were intending to come to the state tournament every year, and that was just planned in the school calendar. So, but Ewing Cooley, what a great legacy. And you may know that the Girls Athletic Union until recently was housed in the old governor's residence there, which is on Grand Avenue. I think it's 2,900 grand, whereas Terrace Hill's at 2,300 grand. Well, that would be wonderful. We're very close, I think, to having both property tax relief and education reform, which are in conference committee, approved. I think they're getting closer on the budget as well, on the budget targets. So there's a lot of work to be done. Would be wonderful if they could get it done this week. We certainly want to see it completed in this month. Well, that's in conference as well, we're certainly interested in working in good faith to resolve that. Remember, we want to get healthier outcomes, the history of Medicaid is we've had major expansion of Medicaid. It's cost a lot of money, and the outcomes have gotten worse, not better. So we've got to change the system so we really focus on helping people to help themselves. People need to have some skin in the game. We need to focus on things like health risk assessments and wellness programs that's going to get us healthier outcomes.
The Senate Democrats last week offered what they called a compromise and changes to the Medicaid expansion.
They changed the name.
But they got to change the substance. The focus has got to be on healthy outcomes, not just changing the name to healthy outcomes, but literally putting in place things like health risk assessments and wellness programs, people having some skin in the game so they contribute something towards their own health. And, you know, we already are leading the country in our goal to be the healthiest state. I was just down in Kansas City last week with Laura Jackson from Wellmark and with Randy Ediger, and to report on the progress we've made, which is being measured by Gallup and Healthways. And we want to make sure that what we do in terms of providing health opportunities for low-income people also is consistent with that goal being the healthiest state.
And, you know, we say this every time, but there's great examples of the positive outcomes from that. Private sector have been doing this by implementing wellness programs. They've seen great outcome with their employees, addressing issues that they weren't familiar with. So there's great examples out there of how this can be successful and how important it is to have that be part of the package.
At Des Moines University, when I was there in 2009, we became the first college or university in the entire United States to become a platinum level recognized by the Wellness Council of America. There have been companies that had gotten that, but we were the first college or university. I'm very proud of that. And, of course, as you know, we became a tobacco-free campus. We built that wellness center. We incorporated the whole idea of wellness into the curriculum. No, but we're getting close. We're getting close. And my staff has been in constant communication with the House and Senate leadership as we work through this. And so I'm hopeful. You know, a lot of times, unfortunately, these big decisions get left to the end of the session. But now is the time to get it done. The per diem expenses have been cut off. It's time to wrap this thing up and get it completed. And we're very hopeful that that can happen this week.
Thanks, Governor. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.